The Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And good morning. We'll begin the agenda with a public hearing, RZC-0701, zone change from A1 to B, Pub, P-U-B.
I'll be giving the presentation today. It is for RZC-07-01, and what the applicant is looking to do is change the property from A1 to RPUD. There is a presentation behind you. I'm not sure if it's on your screens in front of you or not.
It's coming through now.
Okay, there we go. All right. And the property is 73.65 acres in Oxford Township. It's on the northwest corner of the intersection of 73 and Oxford-Milford Road. This is the property here. You can see that. That's the aerial photograph of the property. The applicant is Todd Dockham, and what they're looking to do is put a technology park in there. It is in Oxford Township, and it is not directly adjacent to the city of Oxford, but it is directly adjacent to Milford Township. This is using our new technology here, what they call pictometry. This is an interesting view of that property, so you can kind of see the whole property almost at a 3D look of it. So it's kind of neat use of the new technology we have there, and that's the property. The zoning currently in the area is A1. It's surrounded by A1. To the north and to the west, the property is owned by Miami University. The rest, across the street, is a farm, Butterfield Farm, and then across 73 is a subdivision, Springwood subdivision. That is the surrounding property. The land use plan calls for this area to be public, semi-public, and what the definition of public, semi-public is for areas to be schools, cemeteries, churches, libraries, government offices, utility facilities, and the like. At that time, it's interesting that was placed in this designation, but because it is owned privately, but with that, being that what they're looking to do on this site is to have a research park and research laboratories and that type of thing, and it will be directly linked up to Miami University, it would be appropriate to change this to a BPUD because it will be directly linked with it. And not only that, Miami University is in support of this. Mr. Dockham does have a letter from the president of the university in support of this project, so they'd work hand in hand on this project together. The Butler County Rural Zoning Resolution calls for any PUD to be put together in such a manner not to affect the environment that very harshly. And Mr. Dockham, as he will present to you in a couple minutes, has definitely done a good job at that. He's looking to be certified for LEED certification. You hear a lot about green building and that type of thing. And he's looking to be a platinum, a member of the LEED community. And that is very important. And we definitely have put some conditions in the zone change that would affect that we make sure that, you know, what he's saying today would come to fruition if you were to build out this project. A lot of the other issues that we have had to do with setbacks and that type of thing. We will see that later on in the process, in the final PUD stage of the process. So we feel comfortable with going ahead with this project as far as the zone change is concerned and the zoning. There are 24 conditions that we placed on this. The Planning Commission and Rural Zoning Commission both did approve this zone change with those 24 conditions. Some of the more important ones that I'll kind of talk about right now is the number one. The first one is kind of how I said that he's looking for it to be a green development. So in order for that to be so, we wanted to make sure that any of the green strategies he's talking about, such as green roofs, rain gardens, native plant materials, pervious surfaces, and that type of thing would be included throughout the whole project. So we made sure that in condition number one. Another thing is very important. He has spoken with both the county engineers and Ohio Department of Transportation. They've really put the preliminary figuring out exactly how many turn lanes they would need along 73 and that type of thing and the access points. So there has been a lot of front-loaded information put together. So as I had said, the Rural Zoning Commission and Planning Commission did recommend approval for this, and they're just now looking for the county commissioners for that. So if there are any questions, feel free to ask them now. The applicant is here and would like to give a presentation. So do you have any questions for me?
Thank you. Any questions? This time?
None.
Yep.
Okay.
That's good. Good job.
Todd? Welcome.
Good
morning.
Thanks for the opportunity to present my project to you. It is something different and what I feel to be unique, and I have three simple messages that I wanted to give you today to explain why it is unique and why I believe it deserves your attention and support. The first is versus other commercial parks that may have been presented to you, I have developed my vision as an economic development initiative. I am not a developer by trade, and I am more of an entrepreneur. And I've developed this project in a way where we will, we're not just dividing it up into plots, selling it off and taking our money and leaving. This property has been our family farm for over 50 years, and we want to keep it in the family. And we want to develop it in a way that will attract jobs to the community. It's also one of sustainable green development. We've implemented several green initiatives in the project already and are looking for more. And we will be establishing the project of leadership in Butler County for green development. And from the beginning, I've been dedicated to collaborating with the community on this project, and I'll explain that a little bit further. But I'm here today to tell you that I think it's time for you, the commissioners, to become part of that collaboration. On economic development, again, I'm not a developer. I call myself the director of Miami Heritage Technology Park. And I have a team that I'm developing. I'd like to just introduce Roger Robinson, who's the project lead, and also with Avila Architects in Cincinnati. And Carol Dockham, who will be our business development director. She's a prominent realtor in Oxford with Coldwell Banker. This is more about developing the business opportunities than it is about the physical facilities. This is about creating an engine to push commercial activity. And we do that through a collaboration with Miami University. Miami University is developing significant amounts of intellectual property that could be commercialized and used to generate research dollars at the university and licensing revenues. And that will produce opportunities for tenants in my park as well as jobs for the community. I call it the Heritage Technology Park because it is something that I believe is true to our family heritage on the property. I think when you think about projects like this, you have to realize an extended planning horizon. We are envisioning a 25 to 30 year build out of this project. It's not going to happen overnight. In fact, I've been working on it for about 4 years to get it just to this point. These things don't happen so quickly. So we are here for the long haul. And why in Oxford? Well, I believe Oxford offers a unique mix of enabling characteristics. First of all, for the types of companies that I'm looking to attract in the technology park, these are smaller, upstart, high-growth companies that cannot afford the cost structures in big metropolitan areas, where Oxford offers a very affordable cost structure, not only in labor and utilities, but also for facilities. Second, very unique to Oxford, in coupled with affordable cost structures, we're on the fiber optic superhighway. My property is right along the Butler County fiber optic ring. It's something I know a little bit about from my past work with Innovative Fiber Optic Solutions in Middletown. I'm probably one of few people in the area that not only knows the politics of the ring, but the mechanics and the technology of the ring and the opportunity that it can afford the kind of companies I'm trying to draw into my technology park. That then, with the proximity to a top-ranked university, where there is a significant amount of research going on already, and that creates opportunities to grab these companies and bring them to Butler County. One of the things you have to realize is that more and more research funding for the university is being tied to their ability to show a potential for that research to be commercialized, and in other words, job creating. And you have to bring people and companies like myself that want to be the engine of that commercial development. You might ask, well, what opportunities are there at the university? Well, these are some that are on the boards today. Nanotechnology, medical diagnosis, computational data analysis supporting new data center technologies. We are looking at a data center as being one of the first tenants in the technology park. GPS tracking, smart building technologies, emergency response. These are just what's on the boards today for someone to take a run at. But think about what those opportunities could be over a 25 to 30 year time horizon. No, we're not going to build this out overnight. We have a phased plan, and we recognize that it's a long-term project. I'm very proud of the way that this project has evolved into a green development. As Joe mentioned, we have several green initiatives in the plan that we're ready to commit to. One of the most important one is a constructed wetland for wastewater. And we've been doing a lot of work with the Ohio EPA and modeling after a system that's been built in Loveland, Ohio, that's been heavily supported by the U.S. EPA, and we're very excited about this new technology. Green roofs, white roofs, rain gardens, water capture and reuse program, the application of solar and geothermal energy production. These are already in the plan. We're also looking to get platinum LEED certification. We'd be one of the first projects of this type, not only in the state, but in the country, to get such a high certification. And that is a program offered by the U.S. Green Building Council. And we're using that as our development guide. And we feel several other green initiatives will come out of that planning. And these are some just quickly examples of the kinds of things that LEED certification will promote: pollution control during construction, habitat restoration, reduction of heat island effect, innovative wastewater technologies, and so on and so forth. There's a long list of initiatives that you can use to earn points for the LEED certification. And my third point is that I've been dedicated to communicating with the community on my plans, and in fact, listening to the concerns of the community and adapting my project to address those concerns. I've been working with Miami from the beginning and have been encouraged by them. We had a community forum in April and launched our website, our informational website, thetechpark.com, and have been working with the homeowners in Springwood. And through this process of collaboration, have gotten support from the residents in Springwood, the Oxford Township Trustees, the Oxford Community Improvement Corporation, and Miami University. We've been working with the representatives from the EPA, as well as the Department of Transportation, on site traffic studies and these kinds of things, and we've really done a lot of homework up front to make sure that our plan, as presented to you today, is acceptable to all of those organizations. We've listened to the community concerns regarding sprawl, public sewers, city annexation, traffic, need for turn lanes, and protecting the rural character of Oxford, and all of those issues have been addressed with our plan. So I'm back to my main point, which is I think now it's time to present this to you, the commissioners, and discuss ways that you can help make it a reality. But why this project versus all of the other commercial developments that are presented to you? Well, again, this is an economic development engine. We are collaborating with the university to do it in this way. We are leading green, sustainable development. It's funny, my son was looking over my shoulder last night. He said, "Dad, you misspelled leading." But that's a little play on the word LEED certification. And we've established the project as a model for community collaboration, and I think it's that type of collaboration and the types of sustainable development that I'm talking about, which I believe should be a model for future development in our county. This is not another space available project. So I thought about, well, what are the kinds of things that you could do as commissioners to help me? Well, of course, money. And I think you can help unleash the connections and contacts and resources at the federal, state, and county levels to help me understand what type of financial resources might be made available in the form of grants, financing, incentives, not only for my project, but for the tenants that we want to draw to the community. And primarily through marketing. And help me build awareness with the people that you're talking to, the potential tenants, the businesses that would want to come to this community. Why are these companies that are working on nanotechnology consortiums that include Miami University sniffing around Dayton? Why aren't they sniffing around down here in Butler County? We can use this project to bring some of those initiatives here. And start pointing at the project as a model for sustainable green development. That'll also help me build awareness. This is a rendering of the project. It's an old rendering before we really started discussing a lot of the green initiatives. This is at full build out, if you will. This is our 25 to 30 year vision. We plan to start the first phase of the project on State Route 73, which is on the left side there of the screen. I'll just zoom through this. This is a green roof. This is a rain garden, just to give you some representations of the kinds of things we're talking about. Just a natural depression in the ground there to let the water drain naturally into the soil rather than running it off into the public system. And my final slide is a bad picture of the constructed wetland at Grailville in Loveland, Ohio. Quite simply, the water drains through the gravel and the root system and filters off the waste and then drains the clean water off into a natural plant area. We are actually looking at a natural grassland area for our drainage area. This project was very heavily supported by the US EPA and also the University of Cincinnati. They've done quite a bit of research on this, and it's just an example of a successful application of this technology. So I hope you have gotten you excited about the project, and I'd be happy to answer any of your questions and or meet with you in any time in the future to explain my ideas in further detail. But thank you again for the opportunity to present to you today.
Thank you. Thank you, Todd. And I just want to say how impressive I am of your plan and wish you the best. And as to our help, we certainly, if the commission is supportive, and I think that they are, be willing to sign letters of support and to offer suggestions that I think that would be wise to talk to your state representative, state senator, also to look for state grants and to be a part of our economic development website. We could do a link to your site.
That'd be great.
So just a couple of off the top of the head ideas, but wish you the best.
Thank you.
With that.
Chuck?
Have you contacted or talked to Brian Carlin at all, our economic development director?
Not specifically on this project. I know Brian from my past days with the fiber network, so I intend to do that. I think as we've gotten closer to approval of the zoning application, those discussions have become more and more relevant.
So the Daylily Farm is going to be no more, huh?
No, that's not true at all. That's a good point. We're actually planning to expand our nursery operation. We're very close to signing a licensing agreement with Miami University to sell their cold hardy palm plants that they've developed in their botany department. And we're going to be integrating that business model into our Daylily operation, and we'll be farming daylilies for a long time.
Good.
Hey, Todd, just one quick question, and of course we're all supportive on this green technology park, and certainly anything we can do to count on all of us, but what's your cost per square foot and your pro forma on your lease space?
We really haven't gotten to that level of detail. We're probably going to be building, at least the first building will be a purpose-built facility, likely a data center facility. And, you know, we want to make sure to incorporate all of the latest and greatest technologies. I'll be working with several experts in that field to understand how we can build such a building most efficiently. I actually brought a copy of an article that was in the Journal News the other day about the need for energy efficient data centers. You may have seen it. If not, I'll leave a copy for you. 80% of the cost of running a data center is in energy. And if we can develop an energy efficient data center facility on a fiber optic network, we'll really set the benchmark for such development. And so, you know, we're really hoping to get our zoning approved, and then we can really dive into the details of the facility requirements with our first tenant.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
You bet.
Is there anyone else who would like to address commission during this public hearing, either for or against? Yes, ma'am. You could state your name and address for us, please.
Yes, sir. And I've done a lot of doctoring on my notes just having heard that. My name is Kathleen Zion. I live on Joseph Drive in Oxford. I knew Jim and Maureen Pelly, who originally owned the farm. I also know their daughter, Joanne Pelly Means, when she returned to Oxford to help Dad Jim with the daylily business. She carried it on very well with him in a few years after his death and had a respected in-person and mail-order business. Granted, it's hard work and a limited window of time, April through September, for business to make your entire annual income. Joanne was in town a few weeks last month and when I learned she was leaving August 5th, I asked if she wasn't staying for the Butler County hearing as the farm owner. No, it would be well handled by her son. I know Mr. Dockham has tried to provide many opportunities for public sharing and input about his idea. Unfortunately, every event that he had in Oxford, I was out of town. This was my first introduction to it. His public sharing has been valuable. He met with the farm's neighbors in Springwood and presented his plans at Oxford Community Arts Center. That was appreciated. I applaud him and endorse his method of including the public. I do understand, however, the delicate tension of private property rights and good land use planning. I'm disappointed, but can understand, however, the family has chosen to go the route of a development changing ag zoning. I'm sure I'm not alone in seeing this as speculative, but you have to start somewhere. Perhaps there is some tech or research complex that has been furiously knocking on their door and will occupy as soon as the door locks are put on the building. But I wish the idea of a tech research park was ready to fly on that acreage or any other in Oxford. The proposed South 27 College Suites Tech Park area hasn't gotten off the ground or had nibbles, and that goes back many months prior to its groundbreaking for student rentals. The concept of a tech park goes way back in Oxford when Jim Collard suggested it at least four city managers ago. To date, the research option may not be all that desirable here, although the benefits outlined, of course, look wonderful on the screen. This all in the middle of wonderful agricultural pastures and where much research is already done on Miami campuses. I understand Mr. Dockham's profession is high-tech and fiber optics. Perhaps he's networked, pun intended, with other professionals, but unless perhaps he's secured firm commitments now to use this space as a tech park, some may think rezoning premature, particularly if it affects the entire acreage. If anything, the option of rezoning from ag to a business PUD might be appropriate now only for what is seen as the development site, not the 70-plus acres which also holds two residential homes. And the picture that we saw with the 30-year build-out and the indication that the building would start from Route 73 is where the homes and the daylily fields are. So perhaps the daylily fields are going to be relocated. Springwood residents wrote the County Planning Commission asking that if it is rezoned, it happens in phases. At this time, it would be prudent for this board to ask him for confirmation of how many businesses or customers may have bought into his idea if a facility were to be available, and who may have made a firm commitment to put their business here on the outskirts of Oxford, on the way to nowhere and out of the way from everywhere. I thought the entry might have been discreet from Oxford Milford Road, but I learned from Joanne Means the entry is planned off Route 73. That was even more of a deterrent in my mind for stopping traffic, potential accidents, because there's plenty of good incline there. That's why it's appropriately named Top of the Hill Daylily Farm. Tough sight lines near Springwood Entry and some speeding traffic, I'm sure the Township Police reports could confirm for you. Another area resident offered, the concept might be good in terms of bringing jobs that are high-paying and have a real future without having more retail stores. Frankly, I don't think it's ever likely there would be retail out there other than farm stands and greenhouses. We can't even keep viable businesses in the uptown area of Oxford with concentrated occupancy. There are vacancies at the entire south end of Tollgate Plaza where Kroger is. CVS made a lateral move 3 blocks east to Stewart Square, so there was no net gain of business. And Stewart Square was promised by developer, owner, and architect to be destination shopping. It has more vacancies than fills. The UPS store there is a redundant business and duplicates two UPS stations in town. I heard from three people I notified of this hearing who live on Route 73. One comment, when the Tech Park plans were first presented by Mr. Dockham at the Oxford Community Arts Center, I was there. I would much prefer the zoning change be denied, and many others out this way may feel the same. Another, as long as he does not ask for city water and get the water line out there to avoid an annexation with Oxford. I would like to recommend it remain as much a green belt as possible for the township, a more welcoming and more appropriate entry into Oxford. Anything in the way of an office building, even one story, may seem out of place at that location. Since the Tech Park is specifically office setting, you don't necessarily need road frontage for visibility as you might for retail. If the entry could be off Oxford Milford Road or at the north end of the property closer to the university wildlife area as its starting point, that, if anything, may be a more acceptable option. I know just because a landowner applies for zoning changes, there's no guarantee and nothing holding them to build what they promise. Once a parcel is rezoned, it is perfectly legal for the owner to build anything that meets the zoning, even if different than what was argued for when they applied. I guess that's where commissioners and citizen trust factors come in. The plan is highly ambitious. I regret parcel rezoning just on speculation. It's too hard to turn back when that doesn't pan out as planned, however good it may look on paper. In 23 years of Oxford residency, I've attended 20 years of city meetings, all kinds, council, planning, board of zoning appeals, and historic and preservation commissions. I've seen plans and promises fall by the wayside by the dozens, or start up and not fulfill their expectations, either for use or profit, as with Stewart Square. I would hope, however, that if a portion of this land is zoned or rezoned, for the proposed need of Mr. Dockham, that it will not ultimately be something other than his green development idea.
Ms. Sion, are you aware of the 24 restrictions?
No, that's why I was, if it came out at one of the public opportunities he had for the people, I'm not aware of that. And, you know, your agendas are very thin. Ours usually are a quarter inch thick with a paper trail of everything that has happened to date, so it's easy to reference. But if one of those restrictions might have been starting at the north edge or having the entry off Oxford Milford, you know, that may appease some concerns that people have, including myself. But it did sound from the presentation that it was coming in off 73.
I believe, yeah, Oxford Milford Road granted access, but it has to be compliant with the Butler County Engineer in the state, ODOT. Mr. Dockham, would you want to respond at all to that?
There were several issues there. Are you talking specifically about the access, road access?
Whatever, if you want to give us anything else, you want to...
Well, I think of all of those concerns, the legitimate question, probably the most legitimate question, is the road plan and the access plan. We do see this as a wonderful entryway into Oxford and to Miami University, and from the beginning we have wanted our access, our main access, off of State Route 73, and we have spent significant amount of money and put in a significant amount of work, months and months, with the Ohio Department of Transportation to have them study the traffic patterns there, to plan the turn lanes in and out of Springwood, in and out of the project, and on and off of Oxford Milford Road. And in the end, ODOT has approved that plan, contingent on some additional site surveys that need to be conducted to finalize the exact location of the entry. We've also done a considerable amount of work with the county engineer's office regarding Oxford Milford Road, and at such point that we want access off of Oxford Milford Road, we will be required to do a major upgrade along Oxford Milford Road to the back of our property. So quite a bit of planning has gone into that point, and I have shared that information with the community at a public forum, on my website, which is obviously public, at township trustees meeting, at the planning commission meeting, at the zoning commission meeting. There's been more than several opportunities for the community to understand these issues that were just raised. I'd be happy to address any of the others you feel need to be addressed at this point.
I think also what needs to be noted is that even though this is a zoning change, it's not the end of the final determination because of the PUD designation. So you'll be back in front of the Planning Commission numerous times with different plan designs for the public to
exactly
to observe.
We have embraced the planned unit development process and have done a lot of work over the past couple of years to put that plan together to ensure that when it was approved, it'd be something that we not only wanted but believed in. And we realize that zoning will not allow us to do things that are not included in the plan. And for the community's information, included in that plan is to continue the daily operation, which will not be dug up and relocated. If people would look at the plan that's been presented, they'll see the first phase is nowhere near the daily operation. Quite frankly, that's our business anyway. Also, we've included to continue our agricultural activity on the property as it's developed over the next 25, 30 years. So not only will we be growing daylilies and expanding our nursery operation, but we'll be including to grow corn and beans on the property as we do now.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Have you had any preliminary traffic study done?
Absolutely.
And who performed it for you?
Sorry?
What was the company that performed that?
Edwards and Kelsey.
And what was their recommendation? Can you share with us their recommendation? I mean, they give you the cost of improvements. I have to imagine on 73 it has to be astronomical. Did you run the numbers on it?
Well, we have a rough number for what we're going to spend, but it's a significant amount, approaching $1 million. But turn lane again, we were very concerned about creating traffic for the residents of Springwood. So turn lanes as long as, not only what's legally required, but as long as we could make them in and out of Springwood, in and out of the park, and also on and off of Oxford Milford Road. So it will be a considerable investment on our part to make sure that that section of road is not creating any additional traffic concerns.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Just to speak to the lady's concern, I believe once they get the real numbers and once they get ODOT's comments, that they're probably going to be going off Oxford Milford Road, because just the sheer financial impact is going to be astronomical. ODOT's they don't take that lightly, especially a road like that. You have several other issues to deal with, so I know you raised it as a main concern, but I think when ODOT gets finished with it, that it'll make all kinds of practical and economic sense for them to go off the other road. But that is,
if I could just comment on that, we have done a significant amount of work with ODOT on this. The plan has been presented to them. They have granted a variance approval for the access to be off of State Route 73. Actually, the improvement that the county would require of Oxford Milford Road would be of a greater investment than putting it off of 73. So economically, it would be in my favor to have it as planned off of 73, and ODOT has already reviewed it and approved it. So now the final location is pending their review of site distance surveys.
So you've got a permit from ODOT?
I have a letter with their approving it, yes.
It says, the letter you got, I probably believe, says that they will approve it if you meet the engineering design standards.
Right.
Which they haven't done yet.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's your call, but I'm just suggesting to the lady that it may well be that that'll be determined later. But ODOT's very restrictive, and the county is as restrictive, so if he does build off of 73, I can assure you that it will be done properly and it will work.
Absolutely.
And it'll be a huge investment on their part, so they're aware of that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Does anyone else would like to address the commission during this public hearing, either for or against the project? Anyone else like to address the commission during this public hearing?
Move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Gallivet?
Yes. Is there a, we need to pass a resolution with taking into account all the conditions by the Planning Commission?
I'll move to approve with all 24 conditions. Three or four, whatever is on there.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Gallivet?
Yes. Thank you very much. Chuck?
You want to go into the thing first?
What do you want?
Do we want to go into the... I can go ahead with this, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Whoa. High tech here.
We all set with that?
Star Trek.
Mr. President, I'd like to state here, I'm excited to announce that we will be utilizing a retired, commissioned law enforcement professional to complement and assist with our goals and changes for children's services. Our law enforcement professionals are commissioned with the cooperation and assistance of Sheriff Jones. This professional will assist with background checks of foster parents and employees. He will also be doing random checks of foster homes in the evenings and on weekends. This will be done in addition to the usual home visits by Children's Service caseworkers. This law enforcement professional will also be a liaison for law enforcement agencies in and around Butler County. there's been a deep distrust between law enforcement and the previous administration of Children's Service. We intend to create a greater cooperation between these entities for the good of the children. I've made this suggestion numerous times over the past years, only to receive lip service from previous administrations. This Board of Commissioners is adamant about having the best protection possible for the children who come under our care. In cooperation with our new director, Mike Fox, this is just one more of the many changes we're planning for Children's Services. That's something that we had suggested on numerous occasions, even when Mike was here. Tried to get that done, and we only met with resistance, and just a little lip service. We'll do it. We're working on that, but that never did happen, so now it is happening. I think it's an important step.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Chuck. Next on the agenda is Ronica Dillingham.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Ronica Dillingham. I'm the Executive Director of Mental Health Matters. Looks like you guys have been very busy this weekend. Last October, this commission passed a resolution in support of my suggestion that an instant notification system be implemented, enabling law enforcement to notify Children's Services upon having contact with foster parents. Specifically, gentlemen, I cited the fact that if the Claremont County Sheriff's Office had known at the time that they had received a domestic violence call at the home of Liz and David Carroll, and that there were foster children in the home, they could have notified Children's Services that they were responding to a call concerning family violence, and Marcus would have certainly been removed from that home and would still be alive today. The commission unanimously supported that idea 10 months ago. Recently, a system was put into place that falls short of an effective system. Compared to the system that needs to be implemented, the one in place is nothing more than a cheap imitation of a true and immediate response system. And it was duly noted that no one within our child protective system could be described as jumping for joy or overly excited by that inadequate idea. Then, out of the clear blue, as a result of my telephone call on Friday, asking to be placed upon this morning's agenda to address this issue, it is my understanding from people connected to the media that the commission, specifically Commissioner Furman, decided to send a letter over the weekend to Attorney General Mark Dan addressing the issue and the idea that I presented back in October of 2006. Unfortunately for you, Commissioner Furman, now that your political future seems to be in serious jeopardy, you decided to take the extremely serious matter of protecting our children and turn it into a political game to attempt to save yourself from the contempt of the voters that you have so rightly earned. In September of 2006, I requested of Derek Conklin copies of any correspondence, emails, memos, or any documents whatsoever pertaining to any suggestions that you have made for the improvement of Children's Services. And I have a copy of his email, which states very specifically, there are none. There are none. Specifically, I'm referring to Justin Johnson Jr., the 7-month-old from Middletown who died in a trailer fire. When that happened, you did nothing. Jesus Rodriguez, the 13-month-old of Hamilton, who died at the hand of his brother. Mr. Furman, you did nothing. Courtney Centers, 3 of Middletown. You did nothing, Mr. Furman. Christopher Long of Middletown. Randy Fuller of Middletown. Again, no suggestions, no improvements, nothing. And last but not least, the tragic loss of Marcus Faisal. And simply because Mr. Furman now realizes he is in serious jeopardy of losing an election, he opted to basically plagiarize my idea that I brought before this commission 10 months ago. Marcus Faisal died because of indifference. Let this anniversary of Marcus's death be a reminder of the tragedies that can be caused by your indifference in the future. If all I have to do is notify you that I will be attending a commission meeting to discuss such matters and have that result in the extreme and urgent behavior that could possibly result in protecting our children, then all three of you should take notice. I will be here every week to discuss the welfare of our children. You all knew at the time that I appeared last fall before you that you needed to be supporting the idea of this instant notification system and that it was an important step in protecting our children. But recently you only acted out of pure political agenda. Why did it take 10 months? What are we going to do about the fact that vital information that could have been gained and collected over the last 10 months is now lost forever, and in any information we could have benefited from that time is now gone? If the police had been called over this past weekend to the home of a foster parent for family violence, and no charges were filed, and no arrests were made, we will simply never know it. I have a few questions, gentlemen. Commissioner Jolivet, as president of this board, will you please tell me when you were first informed that official action was being taken by Commissioner Furman to regarding the transmission to the Attorney General along with the subsequent press release?
You have other questions?
Pardon me?
Do you have other questions also?
I do.
Why don't you read them all off?
Well, that's the first question that I have for you. And then I have other questions as well. But when were you first notified that official action was going to be taken regarding the transmission to the Attorney General along with the press release?
Yesterday.
Commissioner Dixon, the same question to you, please.
We talked about it earlier in the week. We discussed this along with many other issues with the new director, Mike Fox. And probably it's probably better if Mike Fox could respond to that, because he was really front and center with that. Mike?
Actually, no, I'd like you to respond.
I just did. And
I'm not looking for Mike to respond.
This is my meeting as well as your meeting.
Yes.
Now, I want to hear from my director, Mr. Fox. So if you excuse me for a moment, Mr. Fox, will you come forward?
I'd like to finish my time on the agenda, and I'll be done in just 1 second.
Mr. Fox, please come forward. My question is to you about your ideas and how when we discussed that.
We discussed in the interview process, when I met with the commissioners in the process of interviewing to get the job. And if you look at the responses to my questions, and I think that was rather lengthy, time we spent together, I forget the date, Derek may know, but specifically the idea of getting the Attorney General involved and to contact local police officers, to include a police officer in, as Commissioner Furman pointed out, we have been attempting to get the Children's Services Agency to employ a police officer to assist in background checks and unannounced random visits for, frankly, several years without any success. And as he said, for whatever reason, those suggestions were ignored. So the initial discussion about specifically about making contact with the Attorney General to track police contacts with foster children occurred when I initially responded to the questions sent to me by Derek Conklin. And then when we met that afternoon for several hours, and then later I had a two-hour meeting with Tim Stoletka, once I was officially appointed, I had a number of conversations with you and with Commissioner Furman regarding the importance of this issue. And as a result of that, I believe Commissioner Furman had conversations, I don't know he can speak to this, with Sheriff Jones, but Monday of last week, we met with Chief Deputy Tony Dwyer to specifically discuss how we could do two things. One, expand the depth and scope of our background checks and to get access to the data that's available to the Sheriff's Department. And secondly, to begin the process of getting local police departments to cooperate with us. And we have to recall that 68% of our children, maybe more than 70% now, are placed in other counties. So this is not a solution that is the best solution, but if the Attorney General and the Jobs and Family Services Department are not going to act, and the legislature is not going to act, it leaves us with the option of doing it ourselves. That discussion about doing it ourselves occurred last Monday. Again, on Friday, I had conversations with Derek Conklin, our administrator, and you and Commissioner Furman, and was directed to go ahead and follow up with the email to the Attorney General, which I did. And I had arranged for a meeting to be in Columbus today at noon to discuss it with the Director of Jobs and Family Services through a luncheon that's sponsored through an organization that I have a relationship with. And we've sent Jeff Centers, our finance person, instead. And then I also want to mention that this commission, when I was a member of it, as Ronica pointed out last fall, at Ronica's request, we, I believe, signed a letter to our legislative delegation. Is that correct, Eric? I mean, that's the best of my recollection. And we had hoped that, and I can't understand, I'm baffled as to why the police tracking idea was not included in the legislation that was introduced and was subsequently passed by the Senate. We sent a letter to our legislative delegation asking them to include those ideas, and particularly the expanded background checks and so forth, to our legislative delegation, and to my knowledge, we never even got a response. That's a Derek question, but I don't think we ever got any acknowledgement or response. And I do know, and I had several questions, I had several conversations with Senator Cates during that time, recommending that the police tracking system be included in the legislation, and for whatever reason it never made it that far. And in the Senate versions of both bills that were passed, it was not included. Bottom line is the idea has been in discussion for just about a year. This commission has acted to support the idea. Ronica has been involved in that, as have Detective Redden that came in from California and told us about the, when she was here last fall, talked about the California system of checking backgrounds and keeping track of police contacts with foster parents and others who are targets of investigation. So the bottom line is, it was not until May that you have to keep in mind that this agency was under the operation of a board during that whole time. And not only did we have difficulty getting our legislative delegation to see the importance of this, we had absolutely no success in getting our board to see the importance of it. And with the commissioner's action to take control of the agency in May, the first thing that they wanted to do was get a leadership team in place, and they've done that. And ever since the first day, I've been on the job about 8 days now, 9 days, and I've had numerous conversations with every one of you. And my direction from this commission has been to make this agency the best around. And frankly, I don't want to argue about what happened in the past. I want to talk about what we're going to do today, what we're going to do tomorrow to make kids safer.
Thank you. The point that I didn't want to. You talked about me sometime last week about getting up to meet with the director. So when did, I mean, you were all last week scheduling that for the meeting today that you're going to be late for, probably.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So, okay.
I mean, we were working on that. I mean, the meeting with Helen Jones, I mean, Kelly.
You didn't try and set that meeting up Saturday or Friday after Ronica.
No, that meeting was set up. Actually, the discussions of that meeting occurred earlier in the week, and I think I know I shared that with you, that I'd be going up. In fact, I shared that with Derek because I wasn't sure what the procedures were when a guy leaves his work. This has been a new life for me. So I let Derek know that I needed to have Monday in Columbus as opposed to in the office, so that when you called at 8 o'clock in the morning looking for me, I had an excuse for where I was.
I waited until 8:15,
actually. Yeah.
Well, Mike,
but that was set up way prior to Friday, that meeting was.
Mike, I know how you drive, so I think you have time to get there, but I may not have that immunity to be a state representative.
We don't have those cards.
I sure hope you make that meeting, because that's important.
It is an important meeting. It's I've met with Director Kelly on one previous occasion when we were going through the process. Phases of trying to move the agency along, but I don't have a personal relationship with her, and that's why we wanted to set this meeting up. But we have sent Jeff Centers on ahead so that he will be there on time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. Now, back to my point, I wasn't asking about when Commissioner Fox may have set up a meeting with someone or what his plans were for today. My question is, when was it decided that the commission was going to be acting upon sending out a press release and a letter to the Attorney General, which happened Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? What was so urgent on Saturday afternoon that the commission got together, and basically every quote on here are quotes from past press releases of mine, that Mr. Furman sent out to the press Saturday afternoon from his county email at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, emphasizing that time is of the essence in getting the system online? Yes, time is of the essence. I suggested it 10 months ago. Why on Saturday afternoon was time of the essence? Who exactly participated in meetings on Saturday or on Friday concerning the letter that was going out to the Attorney General and the press release that was going out Saturday afternoon? Were you part of those meetings, Mr. Dixon?
I knew the press release was going out on Friday. Mike and I had talked about it. That was Mike Fox. That was at the director's request.
The director requested that Chuck Furman on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock from his email address sent out a press release stating that he's urging the Attorney General to implement an instant notification system similar to that of the LEED system?
And Mike Fox sent it to the Attorney General. He had been working with them, and he wanted to send him a letter.
Mr. Fox, was the press release that went out Saturday at 2 o'clock something that you were urging the commission to do? Something you asked Mr. Furman to send out Saturday afternoon?
I had no conversation with Mr. Furman about the press release, but I did have conversations about the letter we sent to the Attorney General, as I did with the meeting that we set up for today at noon with Helen Jones Kelly, and as I mentioned when we interviewed in the process. The idea of I think there is, as early as when we discussed this last fall, there's been a consensus on getting a police tracking system in place. And there have been numbers of conversations about that.
Certainly there have been numbers of conversations. I've been a part of many, many conversations. The idea of the instant notification system similar to that of the concealed carry and weapons system, something I've been pushing for since October. I just find it very interesting that Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, a press release goes out plagiarizing everything that I've said over the last 10 months from Mr. Furman. Using this issue as a political game because you're up for re-election is a serious breach of your responsibility and obligation to protect our children in foster care.
Ms. Rocket, this isn't the place for that. If you want to talk about...
The commission sent out official correspondence from a county email on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, urging the Attorney General to go through with an idea that I've been pushing for 10 months, quoting me with Chuck Furman's name on it.
If you want to have a press conference and on your time, that's fine, but we have county business to do. And if you have any county business that you want to talk about, then we'll be glad to listen to you. But you can have your press conference and have your campaign outside of this room.
I'm not interested in having my press conference and campaign out of this room. Do you recall last October when I brought this idea to the commission and you unanimously, Mr. Fox, of course, was a commissioner at the time, Mr. Dixon was not, unanimously approved this idea 10 months ago?
Yeah,
why did it take 10 months to act on something that was brought out 10 months ago?
Director Fox has said that he explained it very well and remembers the incident as well as I do, reminded me of it, as we're working with the board and working, the legislature didn't catch on to the idea as we changed from a board to a commission, We wanted to get the leadership team in place, and now we're working on it. So,
let me just interrupt here for a second. If there's probably anybody borrowing your ideas, I would assume that it was with your discussions with the now director, Mike Fox. And maybe that's because of all the communications you've had with him over the years. I don't know. I don't think he was stealing your ideas.
Oh, no,
he was making
the
suggestions. He was making the suggestions to this commission when we were talking about the ways to improve children's services. And he, unless I've got this wrong, he told me that that idea originally came from California. They are using it. Now, maybe I got my facts wrong. I've been here that long, and I'm not taking sides. I'm just saying that we were in a meeting.
Using it in California or not, I have no knowledge of that. I know they're using it in Florida for school teachers and for bus drivers.
So, Mike, I would assume that maybe some of that stuff came with your communications, Veronica, but, I mean, you weren't claiming them to be your ideas. We were just brainstorming ideas of what was around the country to help children's services to move forward. That's what I'm interested in.
But that's what I'm interested in as well. I know, like I said, Mr. Fox has been completely supportive. I'm not accusing him of any ideas that I can share with children's services here in Butler County or the state of Ohio. I'm more than happy and hoping to go through with
it. He's the one that used your words, if you say those are your words.
Chuck Furman press release.
Mike Fox quoted the same statement in our interviews, somewhat, so to speak. Now, I don't know, maybe he got it from Chuck. But I'm just saying it's in general was
I think my point has been made. Thank you, and I hope that you continue to move on with this in a very swift and efficient manner.
Mike, you want to elaborate on that for just a second?
Mr. Signo, I would just like to state that when this first happened, the Marcus Faisal situation happened, and the first time you appeared here, I told you at that time that it's really sad that you choose a Marcus Faisal tragedy for a springboard for a political stage. I told you that then. That was way before any of the communications was mentioned. And it seems that you're taking this extremely personal. There's three commissioners here. We're all doing the best we can. Being a law enforcement, I realize what communications can mean.
Mr. Furman, I'm not taking anything personally except for the fact that you have plagiarized my quotes in your press release. If anyone is making this political, you're the one that rushed out on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock knowing I was going to be here discussing this morning to send out a press release.
Discuss?
I made it very clear what I was discussing. How often do you send out press releases at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday? I don't think that's happened. I don't think you've had any suggestions or any press releases or any ideas for children's services in the last 10 years. All of a sudden, Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, you have this sudden push for an instant notification system. I think you're the one that's turning this into a political event.
You just complained about this officer. We've tried that for the last two previous administrations.
I think the officer's a fabulous idea, and that's not what I'm addressing.
It has to do with the trust that the officer has with the children's services. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Yes.
Let me offer a couple of observations. And I think that it is a complete, frankly, a waste of time to argue about whose idea was what. I believe that it's clear that the good news here is I said to Ronica before, is that, you know, plagiarism is the ultimate form of flattery. As a legislator, I always hoped that people would steal my ideas and they would become part of the law. I don't think any of these ideas are stolen. I think the idea here is that this commission is committed to inviting the public to be a partner in the process of changing this agency and protecting children and improving our ability to do that. And we're saying to the public, and Commissioner Furman and Commissioner Dixon and Commissioner Jolivet have uniformly said to me, reach out to the public and invite them to participate in this process. And, you know, the commissioners are, I mean, the bar to the door is literally down. I think it's a good thing that this commission is committed to discuss these changes, and we're already seeing a significant difference. The announcement that Commissioner Furman made about the police officer, that is a dramatic change that will help kids. And as he said, we've been trying to get that done for years. Why it didn't get done is beyond me, but the fact is it is now going to happen. And it's going to happen because this commission and Commissioner Furman, with his background in police work, understands that makes a difference and it's important. We have, the short time I've been there, I listened to these caseworkers talk about the homes that they go into. I mean, these are terrible places to go. And sometimes if the police department is busy, Hamilton is very responsive, very good, as are all of them, but sometimes the police are just overwhelmed and they're stuck with a terrible choice of either having to go in to a home without any protection to try to get those kids out, or to wait 2 or 3 hours until a cruiser frees up to go with them. We will have the ability now to have a commissioned police officer go with them to that home, and that'll keep our caseworkers safer, but most importantly and equally importantly, it will keep the children safer. And having those after hours random unannounced visits, and we're working on the policy, we're not going to get all this stuff done at once, but I do want everyone to know, we are focused, and the direction I've had from each of you has been do one thing, and that is get the improvements in place to make this make it safer for kids, and that's what we're going to do. And I appreciate the support that I've got from the commissioners to do that, because without that support and without as Derek always reminded me, we're in a two-vote world. And without that support, it doesn't happen. And I think it's a good thing that I don't know how it could be portrayed as a bad thing for the commissioners to be involved. It was, you know, when we were trying to work with the previous administrations, they didn't want the commissioners' help. Well, I can tell you right now, I want all the help you're willing to give us, because your involvement in this agency is going to make it better for kids. And the public's involvement in this agency is going to make it better for kids. And I just think it's just not right to, the discussion should be about what are we doing today to help kids? What are we going to do tomorrow to help kids? There's enough blame over this system for all of us to go around as to what the past was. But there is a sense of urgency, and Commissioner Furman's recognition talking about that sense of urgency, that's what we want to communicate to the state. I think they need to understand that this is not just another kind of idea that just kind of, well, if you get to it, things are fine. There is no earthly reason why this system should not be available to every agency in this state. There is no defense for not having it. And the leadership of this commission to start pushing the state to make it happen. I mean, we can build our own systems. We can do our best to try to work with local agencies. But the best system is one that is done at the state level, because as I mentioned before, our kids are spread out all over the state, and we need to have that state network in place. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to give you any updates.
Mike, I'd like to suggest that you get on your way, because it's an important meeting you're going to at noon. Drive carefully.
I'll do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll have communications.
Approved minutes from the last meeting. Approved training and travel under finance, transfers and appropriations, care facility, transfers and appropriations, amended certificate of estimated resources dated August 9th. Approved hire intermittent intern for Butler County Department of Planning. Also, accept resignation of student intern for Department of Planning. Approved 3 contracts under Job and Family Services. Under Children's Services, approved payroll and a hire agency coordinator. And under the engineer, approved or cancel maintenance bonds for summer line sections 2, 3, and 4.
Move for approval.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes. Anything else to be brought up?
I have nothing.
Uh-huh. Motion to adjourn. So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.